Welcome to the IG Living Advocate. I am your host, Abby Cornett, the patient advocate for IG Living Magazine, the only magazine dedicated to patients who are treated with immune globulin products and to their care providers. Each podcast episode will give our listeners an opportunity to hear from experts on a topic important to you. Episode number 5, IG infusions in the home setting. In this episode, we will be talking about the growing trend of immunoglobulin therapy, also referred to as IG infusions, in the home setting. Today, we have guest expert Michelle Greer, Executive Vice President of Sales for Nufactor, a specialty pharmacy. Michelle has 20 years of experience with plasma administration, management, and sales. She has a strong national relationship with key opinion leaders in the autoimmune and immune deficiency arena. She has a proven record of business growth and development through education and working with clients to understand standards of care and payer policies. Michelle also has expertise in both clinical care, reimbursement, and associated challenges faced by patients treated with IG. She holds a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing, as well as a Master's of Business Administration. Good morning, Michelle. Thank you for joining me. Michelle, you wrote an article that we published in our April-May edition of IG Living regarding the growing trend of IG infusion in the home setting. Because both patients and providers need to decide together about the transition to the home setting, I thought we could cover some of those questions or some of the questions they might have today. Thank you for joining us, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
My first question is, could you please explain some of the differences between how care is provided for IG therapy at home versus in an outpatient setting?
Sure. So there are several differences between infusing outpatient and at home. And when a physician decides that he wants a patient to be on immune globulin therapy, there's several things that they can consider when they're deciding on the plan of treatment. And where to infuse is a big one. The other one is route of administration, because IG can be administered intravenously or subcutaneously. And if the patient is getting subcutaneous infusions, it's a given that the patient will infuse in the home setting, I would say almost 100% of the time, because it's considered a self-administered drug. It's also important to consider the healthcare coverage and what they'll allow based on the patient's diagnosis. Every health plan has a medical policy that outlines how IG therapy is covered. And there is a growing trend of payers nudging patients into the home setting because it is more cost-effective than outpatient therapy. One of the other things to consider is brand preference based on, has the patient used immune globulin in the past? Is there a choice and a preference from the prescribing physician? And is there a formulary product for the health plan that the patient is covered by? And then convenience and the schedule that would work best for the patient's lifestyle and what they have going on in their life is important to consider. So if a patient wants to be infused in the home, then a referral is made by the physician to a home infusion specialty pharmacy provider. And pretty much, I would say 95% of the time, the therapy has to be submitted for prior authorization to the health plan. And as we said, there may or may not be a formulary product. There may be a specific brand ordered by the physician. And just what the pharmacist who oversees the care at home, based on the patient's assessment of any other conditions that they have or allergies or prior use of immune globulin, they should have a say in the brand as well. The patient would get a nurse, all the equipment and supplies that are needed to safely and effectively administer immune globulin in the home. which includes an anaphylaxis kit in case there's any reactions, which is very rare. And all of that will be sent to the patient's home. The nurse will be arranged and the patient will infuse at home. They can work with the nurse who will be seeing them and the pharmacy to arrange a time in their home that's convenient for them. And they get the infusion at home. If it's outpatient, the schedule is a little less flexible because the outpatient will pretty much schedule or tell them when they have availability, and then the patient will come in. The prior authorization process is, I would say, a little more fragmented. I'm not sure how that's done these days in terms of how the patient is aware of any financial responsibility that they may have upfront going into therapy. For us in the home infusion arena, especially if we are accredited by any governing body like the Joint Commission, we are mandated to advise the patient what their financial responsibility is upfront so they know going in what they're responsible for, and they can factor that into the decision if they want it at home or outpatient. At home, the patient will have one nurse in their presence, in their home, the entire time overseeing their therapy. Outpatient, it's more than one patient per nurse. I would also say that the pharmacy oversight is a little more personalized and customized to the patient in the home setting, because the pharmacist will really look at all of the clinical information for the patient and decide what rate will be best and, you know, how long the infusion will be based on the dose and what the patient could tolerate and how much time they have for the infusion. Some patients work and come home and or take off, and so they want it as quickly as possible. IVIG should be run slowly because a lot of the reactions are rate related. Every product has a package insert that says in the trials the rate of infusion and what the maximum rate should be for that particular product. At home, I would say we tend to run it a little more slowly because we want to be cautious because they are in the home setting. And even though there's a nurse with an anaphylaxis kit there, there is a little more immediate assistance if that's needed. So somebody with a lot of allergies, they maybe want more clinical oversight and they want to be in a hospital. So there's definitely benefits to each site of care based on what's going on with the patient.
That was really informative. If the patient does decide to infuse at home, can you please explain how reimbursement differs between the two settings, outpatient clinic or versus in-home setting? And then what do patients need to be aware of in regards to reimbursement?
So that is a pretty complex discussion.
It's a pretty complex issue, really.
It is. It's not, you know, IVIG is very expensive. And years ago, the doctor would say, this patient needs IVIG or sub-QIG, and it didn't require prior authorization, and patient would get started, and that's it. Because it's such a expensive therapy, and because the disease states that immune globulin treats are so complex and they can mimic other diseases that are not treated with IVIG. So insurance companies now have pharmacy committees, medical directors that participate in looking up studies and implementing these medical policies. They'll say, okay, for this diagnosis, it's not enough to say this is the diagnosis they have. You have to kind of prove it. So they'll want to see all of the workup that was done to diagnose that patient. So say you have a patient with CIDP. CIDP is an immune-mediated neuropathy. there are many, many causes of neuropathy that are not treated with IVIG, and CIDP is more rare. The other forms of neuropathy are way more common. So insurance companies typically want to see the EMG, nerve conduction study, maybe even a lumbar puncture to see what's in the cerebral spinal fluid. We've even seen some things where they want to see a nerve biopsy. That's kind of gone away because that's kind of a dated way to diagnose a patient. They may, for ongoing therapy, want to see that they actually did respond to the treatment. Response to therapy should be that there's an improvement. There is kind of a misnomer out there that it's working because I'm not getting worse. You should get better. You should see some improvement when you're on immune globulin therapy. So not only do you want to prove the diagnosis to the insurance company up front and get approval for ongoing therapy and reauthorization, they're going to want to see that the patient actually did improve. And if they stay kind of at like a plateaued improvement for a while, they may actually want to say, okay, now try to wean the patient off and see if it's even still necessary, because patients can go into remission with certain conditions that immune globulin is treated with. I would say on the primary immune deficiency side, that's not as much of an issue because that is a lifelong therapy. There really is no other treatment short of a bone marrow transplant, stem cell transplant for primary immune deficiency conditions. And they will typically say, you know, they'll authorize it for a year and then you just have to keep reauthorizing it. As far as how it's covered, immune globulin therapy is less expensive. It's less of a medical spend to the payer to get it in the home setting because really they're paying for a firmly contracted rate with a home infusion or specialty pharmacy provider. And then they pay a small fee for the supplies and the pump and the medical oversight. That's called the per diem. And then they pay a small amount for the nursing services. There's no other charges that are considered. These are for in-network providers. And in the past, it was a little bit easier for an out-of-network provider to bill an insurance company. Now it's pretty strict. You have to be in-network in order to provide the care for a patient with, you know, whatever their insurance is.
Michelle, can you explain some of the billing issues or reimbursement issues that patients need to be aware of that might come as a surprise to them between the two settings?
Yes. As I said a few times already, IVIG is really expensive. Patients should really be aware of what their financial responsibility is prior to receiving the treatment. And a lot of patients don't realize that that's important. They just think if I'm getting this treatment, it must be covered. They're not telling me what my responsibility is, so it must be none. I cannot tell you the number of times that we've gotten patients coming to us in a panic because they've gotten bills for tens of thousands of dollars from both settings, either a hospital outpatient infusion company or a specialty pharmacy that may have been out of network. It's really important for a patient to understand what their portion is up front so that they can make the decision if they want the therapy or not. We've had patients say, you know what, then I don't want this therapy, and they'll be treated a different way.
You know, that is so important. As the patient advocate for IG Living, I constantly get patients emailing me for help or calling me for help because they get these bills they just were not expecting. And, you know, a lot of times it is from the out-of-network providers because they don't know about that ahead of time. Our listeners are very interested in reimbursement because it is so important and it is so complicated. With that, a lot of our listeners are on Medicare. Can you explain to our listeners how that can affect their infusion setting and whether there are any issues that they need to be aware of before they transition to Medicare or transition to the home setting?
Yes. Understanding Medicare reimbursement as it pertains to immune globulin therapy is probably one of the most complex things that we deal with in the home infusion arena. There are several parts to Medicare. We all know there's A and B. And then several years ago, there was the implementation of the ability to purchase a Part D plan, which is basically a prescription drug benefit that the patient can purchase in addition to their given A and B. Medicare Part B, as in boy, covers several diagnoses that are immune deficiency related in the home setting for both IV and sub-Q. For CIDP, they now cover sub-Q IG in the home setting under Medicare Part B. That's it. Everything else would be covered under Part D to infuse. So for CIDP, IVIG, that would go under Part D. Any autoimmune conditions, pemphigus, myasthenia gravis, anything other than immune deficiency would also go under Part D, the prescription drug benefit. And then there are still two or three diagnoses for immune deficiency that are covered under Part D. If a patient is covered under Part B, that Part B benefit will cover 80% of the patient's services. The 20% would typically be picked up by a supplemental, a Medicaid plan, if the patient has Medicare and Medicaid, or a full secondary. Maybe they have, as part of their retirement, a commercial benefit. Maybe they were in the military and they have TRICARE for life. So that under the Part B benefit, it would be covered at 100%. If a patient goes in the outpatient setting, regardless of the diagnosis, it would typically be covered at 100%. If the patient is infused in the home setting, if it's under the Part B benefit, it would be pretty much 100%. Part D is where it gets very complicated and very pricey, because there's kind of an out-of-pocket, and then patients co-pays, and they go through various phases. And we all hear the term donut hole, which is where pretty much nothing is covered. And then you come out the other side, and then there's the catastrophic, and it's almost covered at 100%. So a lot of patients get it because they're on a lot of oral medications, and it gives them some coverage, you know, upfront, some coverage upfront for their pills. But they get a bill for those oral medications, it's just a small amount. And when we're talking about IVIG, depending on the dose, they blow through all of those portions of their benefit right up front, because it's several thousand dollars and they come out the other side on catastrophic, then it'll be covered. But to hear up front that they are responsible for $4,000 or $5,000, depending on what their plan says, their donut hole is, that's where it can get scary. There are options for both commercial and government payers to assist with the copays. And it's important to understand what the responsibility is and what the options are that are available to the patient to assist them with those out-of-pocket expenses. But Medicare is probably the most complicated thing, you know, and site of care does determine how it's covered and how much is covered.
So if you were going to tell a patient one thing before they go off of their insurance and transition to Medicare, what would that be?
If they're currently on therapy and they're about to get, you know, tap into their Medicare benefit, they probably would want to start that discussion at least 6 months before the actual transition, so that they can understand what that transition would look like. There may be, you know, they're getting it at home. Maybe they don't want to get it at home anymore. Maybe they want to get it in the outpatient setting now because the coverage would change that for them. The specialty pharmacy, if they're getting it at home and the specialty pharmacy says, you know, we're going to continue to cover you, there might be a brand change involved. And a brand change, not necessarily a bad or a good thing. It's something that happens all the time, regardless of site of care. Brand changes happen, but you do need to understand, today I'm getting a different brand. So it's important for me to make sure that I understand how I tolerate the brand change. Most people do totally fine, but some people do react to some brands and not other brands. So they would want to understand, is there going to be a brand change? And most importantly, they would want to understand the impact to their patient responsibility. So just preparing it, you can't just do it the month that it's going to happen. You need to go, I'm going to turn 65. My benefits are going to kick in. Let me start having the discussion now.
I was going to say, I so often, and I know you and I discuss this, I'll get a patient that'll call me and go, I need an answer. What do I need to do today for Medicare? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah,
because it is a process and it depends on their diagnosis. And then, you know, we hate to see people scrambling when it's time to sign up.
Absolutely.
You know, Michelle, it has been such a pleasure having you with me today. I want to thank you again for joining us to discuss, you know, what information patients need to know when they're considering transitioning from, you know, the infusion center setting or hospital setting to home settings. I'm sure our listeners found it very informative. Please look for Michelle's article titled IG Infusion in the Home Setting is Becoming a Growing Trend in the April-May issue of IG Living. Listeners, again, I want to thank you for joining us today. Additional information regarding the podcast can be found on our website at www.igliving.com. And if you have any questions that were not answered today, please feel free to contact me at acornett@igliving.com. IG Living is a copyright production of IG Living Magazine, published by FFF Enterprises, and is the only magazine for immunoglobulin community comprised of patients who suffer from chronic illness and their caregivers. Thank you again, Michelle.
Thank you.